Wow, huh? It's a whole new world in such a short time. Due to the coronavirus COVID-19 crisis, our Startup Story Night was postponed, and we're currently all working remotely from home, but still developing stories for us to stay up to date and inspired by Detroit's entrepreneurs. Make certain you follow at InGoodCoDetroit on social media. The most important thing is your health, though, and the safety of the people you love. Keep that in mind. As for right now, just stay home, unless you're an essential service. Let's all do our part to flatten the curve, stay healthy. Together or safely apart, we're still in good company, Detroit. Enjoy the show. Everyone has their style. For some, everything is understated. You lose them in a crowd and never notice they have an invisible hand in everything happening around them. And for others, their flamboyance catches every eye in 139 square miles. Carol Himmelhoek of Himmelhoes.com was born into a life of retail and fashion. And although her path would take her beyond her birthright, far and wide, she would always be reminded of her legacy. They say the business of retail in the world of fashion never really leaves your system. And for Carol Himmelhoek, it eventually called her back. Welcome to In Good Company. Honest stories of the chic runway to becoming an entrepreneur in Detroit and Southeast Michigan. Because we all have our unique energy to what we do. And when we bring it all together, we're in good company. I'm Shannon Casey. I dressed up for my interview with Carol Himmelhoek. I wore my dark gray wool suit, in dark gray turtleneck, a monochromatic look, black suede Chelsea boots, and a fedora hat like my dad used to wear. I figured if I was meeting with an heir of the iconic Detroit clothing store Himmelhoes, I should play the part. And also the family name is Himmelhoek, but people always call it the store Himmelhoes, and it stuck, so they went with it. When Carol Himmelhoek entered, she didn't let me down either. She was dressed in some indie designer, I'm sure, and I complimented her clothing. We laughed about how Detroit has always been a location with style, and actually, a long, great history of fashion.
It was an event to go shopping, and people loved that. And people, of course, really dressed elegantly. Yeah. People refer to it as the Paris of the Midwest.
She's talking about Detroit, or Detroit, as we say in the Paris of the Midwest.
There was a lot of discretionary income available because the economy was thriving. There was a vibrant middle class. The automotive industry enabled people to just have all these resources. And there was a lot of culture in Detroit, a lot of wonderful dining in Detroit. The architecture of all the buildings is just gorgeous and stunning. And it was a bustling place. It was a major city.
But let's go even further back, because that was the Himmelhoes my mother told me about. My mother worked as a secretary at Ford Motor Company for over 30 years. And my young mom would sometimes shop in the Paris of the Midwest at Himmelhoes for women's business wear. But even before that bustle in Himmelhoes, there's a deep history that's very true to Michigan.
Well, I'm curious to learn about the story of your great-grandfather, Wolf Himmelhoek. And can you tell me more about that?
Well, yeah, they came over from Latvia and settled in the Thumb of Michigan, and they were incredibly, hardworking. The foundation of the store started on a pushcart traveling between Cairo, Michigan, in the Thumb to Bay City. It was a 72-mile round trip on a pushcart. He and my great uncle Mose would and Herman, they would make the trek and sleep in the barn where they stored their goods.
Now, excuse my ignorance, like a push cart. A push cart, I'm thinking like, what is it? Is it a horse with it or is it just push?
It's push. And you're walking this.
Walking.
Yeah, you're walking this trip. At least that's my understanding.
When I think of a push cart, I think of walking.
Yeah.
And how many miles is that?
72-mile round trip.
Oh, man. So just walking through towns.
Yeah. Yeah. And selling peace goods for the most part, from what I understand.
Eventually, Wolf Himmelholt opened a storefront in Carroll, Michigan in 1876. And he and his sons would travel to New York and Chicago on buy-in trips. And
in his travels to Chicago, he developed a close relationship with the Marshall Fields family. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like Detroit had so much opportunity. And Marshall Fields provided the financial backing for Himmelholt to then set up a store in 1907 in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And that's where it took off. Our original location was where the old Hudson's building was.
Okay.
And we didn't have the entire block, but we had a part of that block. Mm-hmm. As we started to grow, we were outgrowing the building. And so we sold that building to Hudson's. Hudson's bought out everything that was on that block and tore it down and then built the huge Hudson's building that, you know, we all remember, that was that magnificent structure.
Hudson's and Himmelholt's and so many other great retailers prospered from Detroit's strong automotive economy. B. Siegel, Jacobson's, Winkleman's, among others. And they all had their own focus, their core customer. When I asked Carol about the Himmelholt's customer, she explained,
people thought of us as catering to the working woman, which was kind of ahead of our time. Mm-hmm. We carried a lot of elegant suits, for example, that women could wear to work. I mean, of course, we carried everything, but we did a lot of that. That was the place. If you were a working woman and you were in Detroit, that you would shop at Himmelholt's. And my dad always, so many of the employees were women, and he was very devoted to supporting them wherever they were in their lives. When I was in high school, my dad sat me down and he said, I never want you to be in a position where you depend on a man for your financial security. He said, I have seen too many women who've been married, their husbands divorced them, and they're left penniless. Hmm. And, you know, he said, you have to always just develop this sense of independence and not have to rely on anybody.
It was important that Himmelholt was forward-thinking and innovative in who they captured as customers, its quintessential marketing, and its mix of women's fashion and styles. Many iconic designers developed at Himmelholt.
When Calvin Klein was starting out, he was designing coats and suits, and my dad decided to take a risk on him and stock make a significant investment in his line, and really helped because Detroit was big news at the time.
The actual man, Calvin Klein.
Yes. Yeah, right.
In the mid-1970s, business declined. And it wasn't only Himmelholt's. There was an economic and societal change happening in Detroit. And in 1978, Himmelholt's closed its doors.
Well, you know, there were so many factors that led to that, and I won't lie to you, it was very hard on my parents. I was at University of Michigan at the time, but I was close enough to be able to return home and so forth. And, you know, there was a lot of stress. If you think about growing up with all that they had and all of the resources and the, you know, social standing and everything, it's very interesting to see. You learn who your friends are in terms of how they respond to you when you go through something like that. But what's very interesting is that my dad, who's age 100 right now,
wow,
is an incredibly resilient person.
Obviously.
And yeah, and, you know, he took a realistic self-assessment, examined, you know, he wasn't, He took ownership of a lot of what happened. He wasn't kidding himself about what the dynamics were. He looks back and thinks about what he could have done differently, but he also moved on with his life. You know, I think one of the things that my dad looks back upon and regrets, where he thinks perhaps the business could have survived all the challenges of the time, mm-hmm. is that he tried to play it too safe and he stopped taking risks. And we, in our history, we took risks. We didn't play it safe. So he, you know, reverted back to just buying merchandise he thought was safe to sell. Hmm. Well, that gets kind of boring and homogenous. Yeah. So how do you differentiate yourself and really stand out? And yeah, taking a risk is necessary.
And Carol went on with her life, earned an MBA, a PhD, led a successful corporate career, became an author and professor. And I'm going through this quickly, but Carol has lived an extremely productive life. But more than anything, she would always get a lot of attention because of her name.
Wherever I go and people hear my last name, they say, "Are you any connection to the store?" And then they get really excited. And I've been fortunate enough to have that all my life, but I still have it 40 years later. Uh-huh. And my husband, Steve, was really taken by that experience and seeing it happen to me all the time. And it was the kind of last summer we went, duh, you know, the brand's still alive. Why don't we do something with it? So then we just started playing with the idea. And I started to have a very profound sense of gratitude that I've been given this gift and I need to be a good steward of that gift. If I do nothing, it's actually doing something bad because I have this legacy and it's there and something should be done with it. I owe it to my ancestors and my family, mm-hmm. and I think I owe it to the community.
So they got to work on trademarking the name. And I know what you're thinking because I've thought of it too. The department store was started in 1876. The name Himmelhoes was never trademarked. Wow, it was just, it was
Himmelhoes. It was just, you know, everybody operated in a spirit of trust, you know.
Carol isn't new to business. She actually teaches the class and wrote the book. So she started testing the brand, selling coffee on the Himmelhoes website. Because, I mean, who doesn't love coffee? But coffee wasn't the goal. Carol's ultimate goal was to connect innovative styles and designers to the Himmelhoes name again.
There's a lot of artists, of course, I'm sure as you're aware, in the Detroit community. Many of these people are getting into apparel or accessories or fashion-related items. So I wanted to find out what kind of action was out there. And Bonnie Fahum gave me a list of people who are at various stages of starting their lines and their businesses. And I started contacting.
Going back to that thing
yeah.
with your father.
Yeah.
and
that just
designers.
Felt right. Uh-huh. And so our vision is to be true to not having merchandise that looks like everybody else and going after fresh, new designers. So indie types of designers. So we've decided we're going to create this department store that's almost a department store that carries indie brand boutique-y type of merchandise. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. we have gone after and sought after some indie brands that are a little bit more established. But certainly there's some fashion partners here, for example, in Detroit, where we're making them our partners and giving them a full department in our store. So if you go on our website and shop by brand, you'll mm-hmm. see, you know, even like someone like Daniel Cascardo, who makes these gorgeous handbags with fine Italian leather that's hand-painted. I mean, all, you know, they have their own collection on our website.
And every time I would meet with Carol, I would notice her unique style. I couldn't help it. I'm a creative, and I could see her creativity. An eye for the unordinary is an art in itself in some ways. So I asked, what catches your eye?
It's really interesting because I was amazed at how I think I've just developed this innate sense of recognizing that it, mm-hmm. if somebody's got whatever that it is, and how to articulate that is a very interesting question.
Because a lot of it's intuitive.
It is intuitive. Yeah. But I will say that there's a sense of ethics in being true to yourself, to following your own voice and expressing that in a unique way as a designer, not trying to just copy somebody. Mm-hmm. Having something that's really unique and special, but is beautiful. It's just visually beautiful.
Detroit has been experiencing its own makeover. The cranes scattered around downtown in the midtown landscape. And new storefronts and businesses being headquartered in Detroit.
I think it's really exciting what's happening in Detroit. Mm-hmm. What the end result is going to be, I'm not sure. I think we are revitalizing, we're having a renaissance, but I think we are redefining what that's going to be. I don't think we're going to be a one-industry town anymore. And we may become an economy that is driven by a lot of entrepreneurial energy. And collectively, that adds up to create a vibrant city. And it's really coming, you know, grassroots, kind of from the bottom up. And that's how something truly has to happen. I don't think it can be an authoritarian type of direction coming top down. Certainly there's some big investors. Mm-hmm. But if there isn't that level that's truly authentic, that's building that energy and momentum, I don't think it's going to be as successful. But I think that momentum is happening.
And Carol's dad, Mr. Chuck Himmelholt, former CEO of Himmelholt's, is still around. He recently became a centenarian. And that's not a coin collector. That means he's over 100 years old. Carol lost her mom, Isabel Himmelholt, in 2018. Mrs. Himmelholt was a strong supporter of the arts in Michigan and a fashion inspiration for Himmelholt's women's clothing. I asked Carol what her mom would think of her, the daughter, reviving the family business.
I know she'd be really proud of what we're doing. Yeah, my mom was very entrepreneurial in spirit too. She was somebody who just would go boom and make a snap, very quick decision, but she was always right. And she knew how to spot trends.
Do you see that quality in yourself, or is it different?
To some degree, I guess my mom was just, she was a big personality and she just filled the room. I'm a little more introverted and perhaps reflective, but I still think I learned tacitly to trust my gut.
And Himmelholt.com keeps that same culture of independence and innovation and women's fashion alive today. But don't only listen to me. Go see for yourself. This episode was produced and mixed by Alex Trujano. And I'm your host, Shannon Kaysen. Original music by Sam Bobian and Andrew Bishop. In Good Co. Detroit is developed by the New Economy Initiative with support from the Knight Foundation. Please go to ingoodcodetroit.com to hear more about the Himmelholt.com story in video and blog, and to connect with the resources and practical tools to help you be on trend as an entrepreneur. Make sure you subscribe to In Good Co. Detroit on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a story. Thanks for listening.